Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Trevor Mountcastle and Tom Kim. This week, we have a doubleheader. Two cruises. Two very, very different cruises, Tom.
They are very different.
Can't wait to hear about them.
Well, hopefully the listeners feel the same way.
Well, I mean, it's been so long since we've done a cruise episode. I mean, this might be the longest period of time since we've done a cruise episode.
Really?
Because it's been, it feels like it's been since, what, December? And it's...
Yeah, and it's been a while, I guess. And you know, it's what is it? We're already almost at the end of the quarter here for the calendar year.
End of the quarter, first quarter of 2026.
Yeah.
is almost in the history books.
Yep.
Well, I don't know that I want to relive it though. I mean, Hyatt wasn't great. Although I will say that the Bilt and Rove transfer bonuses to Japan Airlines mileage bank, high point, but too soon to tell whether or not that means that it's a little harder to find ward space. So, you know, I think there's a lot of unknowns from this quarter.
There are. But, you know, I managed to do two interesting cruises this quarter, and I'd love to share that with you. I don't think we've talked about it very much.
Actually, I've intentionally not asked about it, even though I'm really, really excited to learn about at least one of them. The other, I mean, I think one of the cruises, you know, and we're kind of teasing it, one of the cruises is more my style than the other.
I could see that.
I feel like but I think our listeners are going to enjoy both.
Okay. Well, why don't we start off with the first one?
Yeah. So the Star Princess.
Yeah, so this is a cruise I did back at the beginning of when was that? That was I guess it was beginning of February.
February.
It was end of January, beginning February. And I will say, you know, just even, you know, kind of from a meteorological standpoint, very different than the second one. It was cold. You know, the Caribbean was cold. The southern Florida was cold. Everything was cold.
Well, I mean, I think that was also when, like, the Snowcrete storm hit the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. I mean, I feel like if you're going to travel in January, you just have to go to the Southern Hemisphere. Like, there's no going to Florida. It's not going to save you.
Yeah, I mean, this is when, you know, in the news, all the iguanas falling from trees, you know, and being shocked by the cold. I mean, that was what was like. It was, I think, a week's worth of videos in my feed, you know, with iguanas falling from trees.
Did you have any iguanas falling from trees near your hotel before the cruise?
Not that I saw. I did stay at the Hyatt House near the Fort Lauderdale Airport and the cruise port. There's actually like a Hyatt House and a Hyatt Place that are like right next to each other. So tends to be a pretty good location because it's like walking distance to restaurants and shopping. So it's kind of nice and has a shuttle from the airport.
They tend to do a pretty good job with that. And I find that there are a lot of those Hyatt House Places or Place Houses. I don't know how you call them. The Hyatt Place Dash House.
The Kentucky like, Hut of Hyatt Place, you know, mid-tier properties or low-tier properties.
Hey, after that Hyatt word chart change, we're going to spend a whole lot more time in Hyatt Places and Hyatt Houses.
Yeah,
Hyatt Houses are going to be the new Hyatt Regencies.
They may be. But anyway, yeah, you know, this cruise left from Port Everglades. Nothing too significant to talk about from an embarkation standpoint. But, you know, Port Everglades, I tend to like a little bit because, you know, it's pretty close to the airport, you know. So even more so than
Miami.
Yeah,
that's a nice one.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. I've only been down to Fort Lauderdale a handful of times, but I remember leaving the airport and you go over that bridge and boom, you got the port right there.
Yep. It's so cool. You know, you could almost see the cruise ships as you're leaving the airport in your Uber or taxi. So anyway, this is one of the newest ships in the fleet for Princess Cruises, and it's a Sphere class ship. It's actually Not very different than its sister, the Sun Princess, which I cruised last year. A lot of it looks very similar. The actual facilities and everything. It's hard to see what's significantly different between these two ships. They're very much the same.
What makes a Sphere class?
Well, I think they call it the Sphere class because, you know, there's this huge, like, kind of, you know, looks like a globe kind of in the middle of it, you know, where part of the hull kind of, you know, protrudes, and it's a big glass sphere that's kind of on the side of the ship that that spans, I think, about three decks, basically where the kind of the piazza is. And, you know, when you're inside, you can, you know, see out to the sea, you know, through all the windows. And then in addition, there's kind of a dome at the top. So I'm not sure exactly why it's called the Sphere class, but I'm just assuming it's just because of some of the glass architecture that they've kind of included in the build of the ship.
So is the sphere, so you think it's the sphere for the midships side glass or for the forward glass dome?
That I don't know. I feel like the midship one is more spherical. You know, it feels more like a sphere where the dome, you just kind of have, you have a hemisphere, right? But I mean, in reality, both of these are kind of hemispheres because you don't have the sphere kind of envelop, you know, 360 degrees. So
I feel like they should have put that dome back midships. I'm looking at a photo here, and I feel like if they put the dome midships, they could have had closer to a sphere.
Yeah, maybe.
Just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Who am I? I'm not a naval architect.
But, you know, it's a very divisive ship because, you know, it's very different from the other ships in the fleet. You know, there's kind of a princess standard. There's kind of what people are used to. And these ships are significantly different from all the other ones. And I think they're going for, you know, probably a more of a family, younger clientele, which may or may not be, you know, what the standard demographic for princesses. You know, princess tends to be a little bit less family, a little bit more older people compared to some of your mainline cruising, like on Carnival or Royal Caribbean. So the fact that they're kind of trying to move toward, you know, a younger, active, more family-oriented clientele, you know, I think probably adds to the division.
And at 4,300 passengers, that's a fairly large ship for
fairly
princess.
Large ship for princess, yeah, it's definitely their largest. But at the same time, you know, I've grown accustomed to it. Like, this is my second time on a Sphere class ship, and I enjoyed it. I think there's some things that I will say are good about it, and some things that are probably less good about it. You know, overall, I really enjoyed my cruise. It was a week long cruise. Didn't have a lot of ports, though, strangely enough. And actually, one of them got canceled because of weather.
You know, before we leave the design, I just have to say, looking at Wikipedia, which, as we know, is about as factual as Encyclopedia Britannica, it's been built by Fincantieri, which makes me wonder whether it's been built by Fincantieri in that port that I La Spezia, but I'll have to. It doesn't quite say where it was built, but this is the same shipyard that has built some of the MSC ships. And when I look at that stern, it really does remind me of an MSC ship. It's got that kind of, you know, boxy kind of out, protruding out extra little bit that the MSC ships all tend to have.
Right.
And so that's interesting. Yeah, interesting ship. Definitely feels like it. It definitely breaks the mold for Princess.
I think it does. But you know, the cabins are well appointed. I was traveling with two friends of mine, and we were in adjoining, not adjoining, but we were in neighboring balcony cabins, and that's kind of fun because you could ask the a stateroom attendant to kind of collapse the separator between the two balconies. And so we were connected. We didn't have adjoining rooms, but we had a balcony where we could just kind of pass through between the two rooms.
Oh, what a wonderful idea. That's actually better because you don't have like the sound noise of having the adjoining room door.
Yes, definitely.
It sounds so much better.
Yeah.
And you get a mega balcony.
Yeah, but it's kind of still, I mean, there's still a little bit of a structure between the two, so it's not exactly expanding the balcony 100%, but, you know, you definitely can't pass through between the two, which is easy.
I mean, you could almost do shuffleboard between the two. I'm just saying, you know, you got opportunities there.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm trying to think if there's anything, you know, specific about the ship itself architecturally or otherwise. But, you know, it is definitely larger on the larger side. So I think, you know, some people may prefer something that's more in the 2,000 to 3,000 people range. So 4,000 is kind of getting up there.
Yeah, it definitely feels like their sweet spot is definitely a lot smaller. So this definitely feels like that they're trying to do something different. And I'm curious because, I mean, most of the demographic that does sail on Princess, I mean, I know you said this is more geared toward family, but that's not a demographic that aligns to the Princess brand.
It's not, but clearly they want to go in a certain direction. But I will say there are times where you felt the 4,000 people. You know, I think they did not. I think Princess does not do quite as well a job as some other cruise lines. And I'll give you some very specifics. You know, there is a portion of the ship connecting the main dining room and kind of that central area where, you know, kind of that sphere area where you know, decks, where you've got stuff going on three different decks. And there's kind of a retail shop area that's this one corridor that everybody's funneled through. And that retail shop corridor is very, very narrow. So you've got, you know, everybody kind of going back and forth from the main dining room. And then on top of that, they put all these like shopping kiosks and things. And if this thing was like the width of, let's say, the Royal Promenade on a typical Royal Caribbean ship, that would not be a problem. But this is a narrow narrow hallway, and you're kind of like creating a choke point for everybody. And, you know, very much, you know, it felt like there were constant delays of like, you know, you've got people in scooters, you've got older people, and, you know, it just creates a bottleneck. And I don't know why. And they made it worse by putting retail and like putting other obstacles right in the middle of this hallway. And I'm like, why are you doing this? And there are all these people trying to get by. It seems odd that they have decided if you're going to make an area like a retail area, maybe make it a little bit wider so that you can put a retail kiosk selling T-shirts or baubles or other things, you know?
Baubles. There's a word that hasn't made it on the podcast in the past. There's your word of the day. So let's talk a little bit more about the design of the ship before we get into the ports of call.
Mm-hmm.
Anything notable from a dining perspective?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, Princess on these ships puts their buffet. I think they call it the eatery. And I forget what deck number, but they put it in kind of the lower decks. It's like lower, like 7 or 8 or something like that. Not at the top deck. So that is one notable, interesting thing. They kind of put it where the ship actually has kind of an outdoor promenade as well. So that deck is where they put the buffet, which has some benefits because they actually put a couple of food venues outside, which is good. But then, you know, of course, when you have cold weather like we did
in
on
the
this cold cruise,
January
yeah.
weather,
yeah. And I think that's part of one of the things that we also ran into was, again, you would feel the 4,000 people when you went to the buffet because I think it was designed with a significant amount of seating outside. But, you know, when you've got kind of cold weather, very few people wanted to eat out there. So everybody was kind of crowding on the inside. It was very difficult sometimes to get a table.
So is that – I'm just looking at photos here. Does that mean that the buffet is essentially over top the dining area? Like the main dining room?
Yeah, I think
aft?
I think so. It's not exactly over top because I think there's like a back part of the buffet and a front part of the because they're eatery and then it kind of there's another section called I think like the American Diner or something like that is kind of equivalent to an additional buffet for breakfast and for lunch and then dinner. I think they do something slightly different. They do some, you know, American style diner kind of food. A la carte in the evenings that you order with the staff.
Interesting. So different buffet. Anything else? Did you do any of the specialty restaurants?
We did one of the specialty restaurants. We did Rudy's, which is their seafood specialty restaurant. And it's interesting. They actually call it Rudy's on Princess. And I think they also call it Rudy's on Carnival as well. It's essentially a very similar restaurant. Very upscale seafood diner. It was quite good. I definitely recommend it. The only thing I didn't like was I tasted one of my friends, the Chia Pino, I didn't particularly like, only because I think Chia Pino needs to have a lot of, you know, fennel and kind of a tomato broth. But this one was very, very seafood forward, and I didn't taste very much fennel, so it wasn't what I was expecting. But other than that, you know, we got the prawns, we've got the surf and turf. All that was excellent.
So just for our listeners, Chia Pino is?
Chia Pino, I think, is a Italian-style seafood stew. I know it's very popular. You know, the place where I've had it, and I know that's very known for, is kind of Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. Is there? I think they are known for their Chia Pino. But yeah, it's basically just a seafood stew. And again, usually tomato-based. And usually with a very strong fennel taste, because that's part of one of the major flavors for Chia Pino.
Interesting. And I'm very happy that you immediately said it was a seafood restaurant, because there was a part of me that was curious whether it might be an Irish restaurant.
Oh, really? Calling Rudy's is Rudy a very
as
Irish
in
name?
Rudy Rudiger.
Oh, okay.
Rudy Rudiger of Rudy from the movie
okay.
Rudy from
okay. This is R-U-D. I think, by the way. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. No. Nope.
Yeah.
No relation.
No, I don't think so. But while we're talking about food, I will say there were some notable things that you know, that were quite good on this particular ship from a food perspective. Again, the buffet was generally pretty solid, despite the fact that it was very crowded. And on the outside of the buffet, again, in the outside area, there are two stations, food venues. One serving Detroit style pizza, which I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, that's the first time I've encountered Detroit-style pizza on a cruise line, let alone, you know, being available most hours the buffet is open. I think it's probably only open to, you know, for like lunch and through most of the afternoon. But that was actually
very
good.
And you are an aficionado of Detroit-style pizza.
I do enjoy me
some
Detroit-style pizza. I think, what's not to love with extra cheese and Frico, you know, so that you get on the Detroit-style pizza. And then on the other side, they had kind of made-to-order burgers in the outdoor area. Yeah, and they were quite good. They were very tasty. So I'd say if you happen to be on the Star Princess, definitely don't forget to venture out on both sides of the outdoor sides of the buffet and enjoy either the Detroit style pizza or the burgers. They're both definitely worth your time seeking out.
And we're not talking about a Guy Fieri's type burger. We're talking actually quality burgers here.
Well, I don't know why you're, trash talking the Guy Fieri burgers, you know, because, you know, if you're on Carnival and you get the Guy's burgers, I mean, that is one of the best things to eat on a Carnival cruise ship. So I will say it's probably about as good, though. I would say it's probably put it in the same league as a Guy Fieri burger. Yes.
I mean, on the Pride, I was not. I felt like that might have just been a boiled patty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Pride's an old ship, so maybe they just did things differently. But that's my bias against.
Yeah. I only have the one data point on the Carnival Mardi Gras, which is a newer ship. And
that's a much newer ship. I'm sure that they are doing many, many things better there.
Yeah, and, you know, the one advantage, especially with the newer ships, once they've kind of, you know, had a chance to calibrate and had staff get used to kind of the processes and everything, and everything's kind of broken in, which is this case, because I think the Star Princess has been around for a couple of months. It's usually the new ships that are really showcasing kind of the best, usually, once they're broken in.
Well, of course. I mean, on Royal, it's all about the seafood buffet on embarkation day. Yeah, everyone has their own little thing.
They do.
So let's move to entertainment. I know that you haven't been terribly impressed in the entertainment on Princess ships in the past. Any change here with this kind of different target audience?
No changes. I got to say, you know, I tried watching some of the shows. There was one production show. It was okay, but this is where I really do. You know, I think I got a standard set by another cruise line that we'll be talking about here in a minute. And, you know, it is very hard to meet that standard on another cruise line. And I don't think they have invested the money, the infrastructure, the budget, you know, whatever. They clearly, you know, it's not that they're not trying. It's not like the things aren't entertaining.
It's just not a priority.
it's just not as good, you know, as just kind of the fundamental parts. And, you know, the theater is, quite honestly, for 4,000 people, it's a small theater. It's not big enough, I think, quite honestly. I mean, we would go and go like 30 minutes early to grab good seats. And even those were kind of just so. They really do. And on a lot of the shows, they reserve a pretty big section of the theater for people who had bought the Princess Plus package, which had given you kind of priority seating in the theater. And that really does cut off like a lot of the seats for you to even, you know, for people who didn't buy the package in a theater that's already too small. So, I think, you know, every time we were kind of like very off center from the center of the stage. And not that that made a huge difference, but, you know, both the quality of the productions, the quality of the theater, they left a little bit to be desired.
And just for our listeners, we do create show notes of a guide for our conversation. And in preparing this, Tom, you didn't even note entertainment. You didn't even bother to give it a bullet. So I'm not surprised of your answer, but I still had to ask the question.
Well, I'm glad you did, because it is a differentiator. I mean, just, you know, I think if you go on a Princess Cruise, they do have a piano player. They have like a piano bar. They have some live music. They have production shows. They have these things. It's just, if that's a big thing that you want, to have a lot of great entertainment, I don't know that Princess is going to be necessarily your number one. I mean, it's not like you're going to have a Broadway musical or something on the ship. They're just going to have, you know, some song and dance type shows and some other guest entertainers, and that's about it.
Okay, so let's round out the ship. Let's talk casino before we start talking about the ports of call.
Sure. So this is a pretty big casino. There's a non-smoking casino, and there's the regular smoking casino. A lot of gaming on the ship, and a lot of people gambling. You know, it was very, very busy. One of the things I noticed was apparently Princess has some kind of deal with Light and Wonders, one of the casino slot machine manufacturers. And one of the casino slots that they sell a lot of is something called Huff and Puff. And Huff and Puff was prominently displayed. They had a whole section and like with the big LED banners and everything, you know, kind of pointing this out. So if you're a Huff and Puff aficionado, you will have about five or six different versions of that slot machine, and lots of different machines to choose from. So which actually kind of played into kind of what my gaming strategy was on this ship. I kind of like was a little bumblebee going from each Huff and Puff pit, putting $20 in there, and generally doing okay. You know, I would like kind of spend $20 or $20 or $40, and you know, if I made $20 or $40, I'd be like, that's it, I'm going to move to the next one.
So you did a lot of huffing and puffing.
I did do a lot of huffing and puffing.
So any, we always stop and talk about this anytime we talk about cruise lines. Any opportunities for maximizing, leveraging the casino for either augmented organic spend, or any ways to get a little extra discount?
Absolutely. I think we've talked about this in the past, and I definitely continue to do this as well myself. I went online and bought some discounted Princess Cruise gift cards. They're typically available for about 5% off. You can get them from like GCX, you can get them from Gift Card Plus, you know, so, and then you just go down to the guest services and you can basically redeem them, add them as onboard credit onto your account, which you will debit from in the casino. You know, as you can do so either at slots or table games, and basically do so fee free for Princess. Princess doesn't charge you a transaction fee for loading, doing your gambling, and charging to your room, both at the casino tables and at the slots, which is kind of nice. So definitely something you can utilize. Again, I don't happen to know if there's a particular amount you have to play through for them to not, you know, come back at you and say, hey, you pulled all this money out, but you didn't really play it. You know, I do think most cruise lines will stop you at some point. It depends on what their thresholds are. I don't know what they are. So I would probably play through some of it, or, you know, at least make, you know, make up some excuses, I guess, if anybody asks you. But definitely, it is a play out there for people, and you know, you absolutely can charge both balances on the slot machines and the tables for no fee. Also, 1,500 points is what you would need from a points perspective to start getting free drinks at the casino, in the casino bar. It's not a super high threshold. Again, the points on Princess Cruises, I think, are half of what they are on Royal Caribbean. So they're about $2.50, I think, per point of wagering. So definitely, I think if anyone's doing some modicum of gambling, you can probably at least get to the threshold to be able to get free drinks in the casino. And then they will also post different point thresholds for gambling to be able to get a free cruise. So they'll give you some different options for that as well.
Can you give us an idea of what that free cruise looks like? Is it 15? Is it 3,000?
I think it's like 3 to 5, you know, and I knew you were going to ask that, and I completely forgot. But
these are the drawing, these are the enduring questions that our listeners need to know.
That they are. But, you know, they are easily accessible online. I mean, I think you can take a look and just do a search for Princess Com Cruises. Lots of people have covered this topic, and I'm sure we can find a link or something for the notes. But definitely something that's doable. I think if you're any kind of like, if you just enjoy gambling, or if you plan on doing some, I think doing some on a Princess Cruise is probably not a bad idea. And I think you definitely, it's in the realm of possibility for a low stakes gambler, to get an offer for an additional Princess Cruise later.
Great. So when you were not huffing and puffing, what beach bars were you blowing down?
Well, you know, so this cruise had a couple of different ports. Actually, not a ton. I think there are really only 3 ports on this week-long cruise. And one of them got canceled because one of them was going to be to Princess Cays, which was their private island. It's actually a tender port. So you actually tender out in kind of a bay, and then you've got, you know, the little ships kind of come up to the big ship and transport you to the beach area. It was so windy that they canceled the port. And they substituted Nassau, Bahamas instead, which, you know, is not very exciting for us, you know, traditional. I mean, if you've done any kind of cruising, you've probably been to Nassau umpteen times, and eventually you're just like, well, I'm probably not even going to get off, which was the case here. We didn't, you know, me, my friends and I, we just treated that like a sea day, and went to one of the lounges, and I think we were probably playing cards or some other board games or some doing the trivia and do other things, rather than hopping off the boat and kind of enjoying the facilities of the ship.
I feel like the Nassau port, the best part is like seeing the other ships that are there.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, I could be wrong, although I did see a post by Marshall Jackson or MJ, who is a boarding area, or was, I suppose, a boarding area blogger and obviously a friend of both you and I. And he had said that the new there's a new Royal Caribbean club or destination. Yep. And he said that was quite good. So maybe that's something to go see in Nassau, but otherwise there's not a lot to not a lot drawing us there.
But also at some high costs, because I think that Royal Beach Club per person is probably in the $100+ per person range. You know, it does include alcoholic drinks and some other things and food, but it's probably the $150 to $200 range depending on how busy it is. And I hear that maybe allowing guests to go without a drinks package. But I think I haven't heard pricing about that just yet. I know that that's probably something that's coming up.
So in other words, there really is the Royal in Royal Beach Club is the price tag.
Yeah, it is with definitely some costs.
The King Charles price tag.
Yeah. There were also 2 other ports on this cruise with Princess. One of them was Amber Cove. Which is, I think, mainly a Carnival Corporation port in the Dominican Republic. Again, that one we did get off the boat, and they have a nice pool area. Again, the temperatures were pretty cool, and it was a cloudy day. So let's say I was the only one that ventured into the pool. And I was quite, it was quite chilly. And as such, I made maybe one or two laps around kind of the lazy river-ish kind of pool layout that they have. And that was enough for me. And I think after about an hour or two, I think we just left. There probably are some other things you can do excursion-wise at Amber Cove, but I will say that the two or three times that I've been there now, really all it's been for me is kind of a pool destination, and that's about it.
So you've been there before as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. On that Carnival Mardi Gras cruise, as it turns out, from a few years ago. But I would say the last port that we're going to talk about is probably the best one, and actually an excellent port. I think I definitely would recommend it. You know, if you have an opportunity, if this is someplace you haven't been, definitely I would say it would not be a bad idea to seek it out on a cruise itinerary. That would be Grand Turk. Have you been to Grand Turk, Chuck?
Believe it or not, I have.
Oh, yeah. Great.
I didn't go to, what is it, Devil's something. Instead, we went to Margaritaville and and had a lot of fun at the Margaritaville restaurant.
Got it. Well, Grand Turk, it's an island, right? And the nice part about it is, like I think Margaritaville and a couple other places are very close to the dock where the ships, where the ships are ported. You know, you get right off
now,
the
did
ship.
Did you have to launch, or did you actually have a pier?
We had a pier. There was no tendering, which is great.
Years and years ago. This is probably 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
We had a I think we had a tender.
Ah. Well, I think they've yeah. fixed that
so,
now.
So that's an upgrade.
Yep. It's not my first time to Grand Turk, but the first time we rented a golf cart. So we got to see more than just kind of the pier area, because you know there is a very nice beach, by the way, right near the pier. And so you really don't have to go very far to have a very nice beach afternoon or morning or whatever you want, a beach day. Because there's a beautiful, beautiful beach that's just right there. You just steps from where you're gonna get off your ship, and that alone I think is a positive. But by renting a golf cart, you have access to all the other beaches on the island, which surprisingly there are a lot of very nice, very isolated, very not busy, secluded beaches that are very beautiful. We went to a couple of them, and we went to the lighthouse on the island. It's not a very large island, again, which is why you can get around, pretty much circumnavigate the island on a golf cart, in a couple of hours, which is what we did. And I would definitely recommend that. I think especially if you've got a couple of people with you, I think you could, get a four-person golf cart, have a beach. You can have a beach day at some even more remote and quiet beaches that are quite beautiful, beautiful white sand, beautiful, turquoise water, all the things that you think of in a prototypical Caribbean beach, tropical destination. I think you can get those. And we also had a nice lunch, eating some local food, some curry goat and some barbecue chicken at a local restaurant, which was nice. It was a very nice visit.
So you're the Magellan of Grand Turk, circumnavigating the island.
Yes.
You had some great beaches, which,
yes.
I mean, I think one would expect on an island such as Grand Turk. But goat? You had goat?
I did have goat.
Had you previously had goat?
I have.
And, this your first?
I think if you are going to Jamaica or if you're going to a number of different Caribbean islands, I think curry goat is actually a very, very common dish. And I think it's something you're going to find widely distributed across the Caribbean.
That's interesting. I had not heard of that dish, but—
Oh, really?
I mean, usually I stop reading after I see the word curry. So I've probably been to places that have had it. I just, yeah. I just know I don't do spice and so I clearly missed the ability to try yet another protein.
Well, I will say again, I think if you talk to a Jamaican and you talk about some of their favorite foods, chances are high curry goat will be mentioned. But, final thoughts, I think Star Princess, a good ship, definitely one, despite I know that it's a little divisive for some people. I don't think it's all great. There are definitely some things that I would change about it. But as far as did I have a great, relaxing, week-long Caribbean vacation on this ship with my friends, eating a lot of great food, enjoying the different ports and doing a little gambling, I think Yes, yes, and yes to all of those.
Food quality compared to a normal run-of-the-mill Royal Caribbean ship?
I think the food quality is very high. I think the main dining room, the buffet, all of it was pretty good. I would say
better than a Royal?
I would say better than an average Royal Caribbean ship. But but I think it would actually be maybe less good than the ship that we're about to talk about, which is a Royal Caribbean ship.
Yeah, so let's change gears. This is a first on the Travel Stories podcast. This is a review of a brand new ship class, at least to the podcast.
It's due to me.
Sailing for a couple of years. This is the Icon of the Seas, the venerable Icon of the Seas.
Yeah,
I'm excited here.
Yeah, I mean it has made a splash. You know, it's been out for more than a year, so you know I wouldn't say it's brand new, but still it's new to me. I had not sailed previously on an Icon class ship, and I was very excited to do this. And I was excited to do it, you know, also because you know I had quite a few people in tow. We had the same friends that I had taken the Star Princess with. They were repeat on this one as well. And I had several family members, including my parents, my brother, my nephew, my brother's wife, and another mutual friend. All of us. There was about nine of us actually that dined together on Icon of the Seas, and it was very much a great cruise. I had high expectations. I will say, just to get it off the chest, you know, to say expectations met.
I mean, that's pretty impressive when you think about it, right?
Yep.
I mean, this is the newest ship in the, or the second newest ship in the fleet now.
Yes.
Right? I think Star is out.
Yep. Star of the Seas is out. And there's a third one, Legend of the Seas, also in the process of being manufactured.
Well, and Legend's, I mean, more than manufactured, I think she's probably going through sea trials by now because I think she debuts in only a few months.
I think that's right. Yep, definitely.
So this ship, this has neighborhoods. This is almost the same passenger count as the Oasis class, but it's got a little bit of a different design.
Yes.
It's got a different concept for the Aqua Theater.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's got a different concept for some of the pools and stuff in the boardwalk area,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yep.
So talk us through that if you could.
Yeah, you know, so I think if you've been on a Royal Caribbean Oasis class ship, it's actually, you know, having been on several of them, right? And actually most of them, I'm trying to think I think I've been on every other Oasis class ship, actually, to be completely honest. This one is not going to be that big a surprise to you. I mean, I think in scale, it is bigger, or it is at least, you know, there's some things that are larger on it. But realistically, I think getting around, it's not that different. You know, there's still kind of a Central Park area. It's still a Royal Promenade. There's still kind of sort of the boardwalk. There's like Surfside, which is more of a kids-oriented area without the theater. There is no dry slide. They got rid of the Ultimate Abyss. That is something that's gone. There are quite a few new eateries and some that are a little different than what you see on the other Oasis class. But from a scale perspective, it was very familiar, actually. You know, I getting around the ship, you know, it didn't necessarily feel that much larger than an Oasis class ship, although I will say the amenities and the things on board are even more overwhelming than on Oasis, because you know Oasis class ships are already pretty damn jam packed with stuff, you know, and this is just like, let's squeeze some more in there, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, the Oasis, you know, just with that carousel. I mean, you know, you think about just one small aspect on the Oasis, mm-hmm. where that carousel is handcrafted horses and everything. And from what it looks like on the Icon, they just have so many other things.
They do. And in fact, I didn't get a chance to try everything, to be completely honest, you know.
And you were on a week-long cruise.
I was on a week-long cruise.
Not like a three-day.
No. I was on a week-long cruise, and I tried a lot of things. We did. We saw pretty much all of the major entertainment offerings, so that was good. We managed to catch almost everything.
Can you give us a couple of highlights?
Absolutely. So the ship has an aqua theater. So there was obviously an aqua show, and that was quite good. It was very, I would say, much more varied, actually, and even a little bit better than some of the aqua shows on the Oasis class ships. It is indoor. It's in the aqua dome on the very top, top decks of the ship, rather than in the rear and the aft and outside. As a result, I think they had a quite a wide variety of acts in the show, more than just the high diving. And the high diving piece actually is a little bit higher. I think they said they made it maybe a foot and a half higher, at like 56 or 57 feet high than an Oasis class ship. And they're diving into a pool that is actually a few feet shallower than the Oasis class ship. So I guess there's and as a result, there was maybe a little bit less of that. There was a little bit less of the high, you know, the what is it, the high rope kind of acts where you had, you know, people doing a tightrope type act, you know, several decks above the theater floor. So we had a little bit less of that, but they still had robotic arms doing things. They had skateboarders. They had people doing all kinds of acrobatic things in addition to the high diving in the aqua show. So it was pretty jam packed, and I would say it was a little bit more varied, I would say, even than what I had seen previously on other Oasis class ships. So there was an aqua show, quite good.
Almost sounds like they focused on the things that really engage the audience. Yes. I mean, like that tightrope, I mean, is kind of cool, but it never really engaged, I think, the audience.
Yeah.
Like I half the time, they're halfway across before we realize that they're up there.
Yes, absolutely. They also had an ice rink. This one's circular instead of kind of a square, which is what's typically on all the other Royal Caribbean ships. There were two ice shows that they did. One was very like kids oriented, so they had like Humpty Dumpty and other fairy tale characters, and the other one was just, you know, more of the traditional type ice show. I would say not necessarily better or worse than what's on other Royal Caribbean. I would say consistent. So definitely worth going to and very enjoyable. We managed to grab the front row in the center. And definitely got, you know, bits of ice on us, you know, as the skaters whisked by. So that's always fun.
I feel like after you had gotten us there for the Utopia, like there's just no other way to enjoy that,
really
that kind of a show.
Especially with little kids.
Yeah, yeah. When we did the Allure, we went early just to be able to sit right up front as well. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. You're spoiled for life.
You are.
You just have to be up front.
Once you do it, you never go back. So,
yeah, yeah. Oh, glad to hear you got that front row center seat. Usually, that's reserved for what, the Star and the other more expensive suites.
It is, and you do have to kind of get there a little early to be able to grab those that seating. But you know, we were one of the first ones in line, and we grabbed it, and it was fun.
And I'm sure your nephew loved it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, he also loved, I think, although it was a little long, they have the Wizard of Oz, basically with much of the music from the motion picture from, you know, what, the 1930s or whatever it was. So the production value, very good. That's what's in the main theater. My brother was kind of shocked. He didn't think that a show at sea could do as much of the special effects. I mean, there was like, you know, there was fake, it was snowing in the theater. There are people like, you know, witches and other people like flying around. They're, you know, just all kinds of crazy special effects, for this live action show. You know, again, it was a little long, it was an hour and 40 minutes. So, not the longest. I think, Mamma Mia on Allure is probably longer, but, it's still a very good show and entertaining. And again, tremendous, tremendous production value.
So let's keep this going. Food.
Yes.
You've got, did you do any special restaurants?
We did some special restaurants for lunch. And again, I cannot stress that, you know.
I feel like that is the ticket
it
with
is.
Royal.
It really
it's
is.
It's the lunch. It's such a great value and you such get a great such value. A great experience.
Absolutely. And I couldn't say it better. I definitely want to make a point to the listeners that if you're going to do a Royal Caribbean cruise, don't look over or don't skip the lunch at the specialty restaurants. I think that's where the value is. The traditional dinners are quite expensive now. You know, like the steakhouse dinner, I think it's in the $50, $60 range for normal price. Mind you, you can typically get a discount of all of these prices, but, you know, and the best prices typically are going to be during like a Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Cyber Monday kind of sale. And that's what I did. I bought lunches for everybody. We did Giovanni's, which is the Italian restaurant, and Hooked, which is a seafood restaurant. So those were our two specialty dining meals. They're both lunches, both very inexpensive, like $16 to $18, I think was the price range.
Were they sea days, or did you do one on embarkation day?
We did them both on sea days. I was kind of tempted to do chops or something on embarkation day. I was kind of toying with that idea, but I ended up not doing it. And it was probably fine, because I will say, just to talk about one of the specialty things that happens, especially on newer ships, is usually on embarkation day, they want to do a little bit of a surprise and delight, especially in the inaugural season of these ships. So if you're on a newer ship, don't miss the buffet on embarkation day, because they will do very much, if you are a seafood lover, because they will do a seafood extravaganza. And when I say extravaganza, I mean, I cannot stress enough, the quality and amount of seafood on this buffet is ridiculous.
I know that that's something that you particularly enjoy, you and your family.
Oh, definitely.
So I'm glad to hear that. What other restaurants are there on board?
There are quite a few others. There is Chops Grill, which is a steakhouse. There's Izumi, which is a Japanese restaurant. Those are both specialty restaurants.
Standards
and on many ships. There is an Empire Supper Club, which is quite expensive, actually. It's a multi-course meal, and it includes kind of a jazz performance. So it's a very, you know, kind of high-class, high-end dining. It's in the $150+, I think, price range per person, at regular price. I think there are times where you can get a bit of a discount on it, but expect to pay at least $100 per person for that.
And do they have that Central Park? What's that other restaurant that has the
150
the really nice? Is that the Martini?
It is.
Place?
Yes.
The Martini that I've yet to make, or that I've yet to enjoy.
Have you not enjoyed that yet? Oh my goodness!
No.
Like
they didn't offer it as lunch on any of the cruises that we've been on.
Oh.
So I've never had a chance because they won't. I guess they won't serve that unless you're there for a meal.
That is one of the things that has not transferred from the Oasis class ship. So there is no 150 Central Park, which is the restaurant you're talking about. And the Urban Garden Martini, I think, is what it is. That is quite good that they serve there. But no, that did not make it onto the Icon class of ships. But what they did make it is a lot of new eateries. There's a Surfside Eatery, which has a bunch of snacks. They got rid of the Doghouse, which is typically hot dogs and other things that is in the boardwalk area. And instead have kind of more of a kid-focused snacks place called Surfside Eatery. And I will say one thing that have on this ship are amazing churros. There are churros that they serve there. Definitely seek those out. Delicious, delicious churros. So.
Do they put
cinnamon sugar
leche in them or anything? Or
are they just cinnamon, cinnamon sugar sprinkled on them, but delicious nonetheless.
Oh, okay. You're making me hungry now. I love a good churro. I am a churro fan.
Yeah. The most significant thing they added was in the Aquadome, the same area where the Aqua Theater is, there's what's called Aquadome Marketplace, which is kind of just like a food court area with different food stalls. Excellent made-to-order crepes. You know, there's like a Mediterranean, you know, bowl kind of place. There's a Chinese food place. There's a sandwich place. There's a place that serves mac and cheese. All of them, you know, all differing foods, you know, different qualities. I mean, I'd say the crepe is one of the more impressive ones. Definitely delicious. I really enjoyed some sandwiches from the sandwich place. I would say the Mediterranean place was good. Even the Chinese place was good too. And they're especially good because the Chinese place and I think the sandwich place are open. They close at midnight. So they're open quite late.
Oh, that's convenient. Convenient.
So I ended up going there a couple times. All complimentary, yes.
And then Base Camp Burgers too, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, they have another burger place. You know, I think typically the burgers on Royal Caribbean have been kind of meh. You know, they've been kind of cafeteria style burgers. The Base Camp one is a little bit better. I think it is not quite as good as Guy Fieri, I would say, but it is approaching it, and it's definitely an improvement. So I would say among the best burgers available within Royal Caribbean, although, again, calibrate your expectations.
So skip the Everest Base Camp burgers.
I don't think skip them. I would just
just manage expectations.
But they're quite good. They're quite good. They're just not maybe as good, because the toppings and such. It's not like they have like crazy like bacon and other things that I think some of the Guy Fieri burgers had. Like other options. I think you have for toppings and things that might elevate the Guy Fieri just a little bit.
So before we get to the main dining room, mm-hmm. How is the pizza?
Pizza is, so they have the Sorrento's pizza. I think Sorrento's is fine, especially for late night, but I would say it's not as good, for instance, as Princess. I'd say it's definitely, and I would say even maybe not as good as even Carnival in some cases.
Okay, we will disagree there. I think that Sorrento's pizza is like the vice that you just can't avoid.
It's great for late night dining because again, it's a good option.
It's got the oil, it's got the grease, it's got some of the flavor, it's the thick and crunchy. Yeah. Okay. So they got the standard Sorrento pizza.
They got the standard Sorrento pizza.
I am comforted. I can now take the icon. Now tell us about the main dining room.
Main dining room, again, not too different than other, again, menus very similar. The one interesting thing was there were two nights of lobster. So they had a lobster on the menu twice during this week long. Again, a little bit different than a typical week long cruise on Royal Caribbean.
Well, and that says a lot.
Yes.
So if we go back to September when I did that Allure cruise in Europe, mm-hmm. they didn't do lobster at all. They did like jumbo shrimp.
Yeah,
so the fact that you're doing two lobster nights, that's pretty impressive. Maybe not impressive, but like, I think that's pretty good. Make me hungry.
Yeah.
A lot of this is making me hungry.
Not only did they have two lobster nights, but they were also a lot more liberal in a second lobster tail. So there were several of us that had more than one lobster tail for dinner. They're typically very strict about these days. The policy is if you want the second one, you're going to get charged. There was no charging, and they were, again, very liberal. I think part of it was on some of those lobster nights, if you had gone to the buffet, you could have had unlimited lobster potentially because, again, they were
– wow.
My sense is that Icon – let me just put it out there. I mean, it is a more expensive ship. I mean, it is probably among the highest cost cruises for a 7-day Caribbean cruise in the Royal Caribbean fleet. You're going to be paying a premium to sail on this class of ship. And
so is this a furthering of your theory that based on the average cabin rate drives what the food budget
quality.
Is
yes
the food quality or food budget, which then drives food quality.
I think it is very much supporting that theory, and I think I probably mentioned this before, but I do think that there's a food budget on these cruise lines and cruise ships. I think I feel like they give more budget on the cruises that have a higher average cruise fare. And I think Icon is absolutely a ship where the average cruise fare is the highest within the entire fleet. And clearly, I think the food quality, the options, the things that are being offered in the main dining room, all of it are tying together hey, you're paying more, you're getting more.
And that's understandable. I mean, second newest ship in the fleet or third newest, right? Is it? Icon, Utopia, and then Star.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Or Star, Utopia, then Icon. No. Totally logical. Icon has just so much great press, so much great, word of mouth
buzz.
And everything. Buzz, exactly, the buzz. So main dining room, great. Food in general, great. Churros.
Yeah, among the best in the Royal Caribbean fleet. In other words, like I think everyone commented that the quality and variety and what's available – literally, it cannot be surpassed within the Royal Caribbean fleet. Icon is the pinnacle.
Okay. That leads me to the next question. Huff and puff in the casino?
not as much as Princess. Princess, by the way, was over the top. There was so much huff and puff on the, in the Princess Casino. This casino, I'd heard some things. It is a very large casino. I actually didn't particularly like it. You know, I thought the layout was a little claustrophobic. There were a lot of machines, a lot of people in it, a lot of games. There were two craps tables. But that's also not too uncommon for other Oasis class ships. You know, other Oasis class ships have that as well. I did some gambling on this ship. You know what I did find that was my new favorite slot, at least on this particular ship, was Momo Money or Momo Mummy. I think actually
mummy like Brendan Fraser mummy. You
know, yeah, Brendan Fraser mummy. Yeah, so it's a fun little game that I found kind of late in the cruise, and I was doing I made quite a bit of money on that. Actually, kind of helped cover my losses from the six Huff and Puff machines that took my money earlier in the cruise.
Momo
Mummy, and I think Mo Mummy. I think there's two versions, like Momo Mummy and Mo Mummy. So, both of those were winners for me. I enjoyed both of those. Also played a little craps on the ship, including with my brother, and we had some good roll. We had a good roll, and then I think I ended up gambling with my brother a grand total of like 20 minutes, because you know, we had a good roll, and he's like, "Hey, are you up?" I'm like, "Yeah, a couple $100," and they're like, "Okay, let's go." And I'm like, good idea. So
so he's a good influence on you.
He was a good influence, yes.
As opposed to me, who'd be like, it's a good roll. Let's keep going.
I think he liked the idea that we had a good roll. We made some money, and he was like, you know, I think this is a good idea to leave up. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Okay, let's go.
The voice of reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't exist when we typically travel.
But, no, it was good. I think I did do some gambling. I did not lose very much money on this cruise. I did lose money, but like $100 or $200. I think it was very, very cost effective from a gambling perspective. And of course, just for our listeners, you know, I'm not a big fan of Royal Caribbean gift cards, just to reiterate. I don't typically get them, and they're usually pretty hard to use sometimes, especially, you know, from a manufactured spending or augmented spending perspective. So I don't necessarily recommend them as a play, but I did charge quite a bit of chips and other things from slot balances to my room. And I did use a 3X card for that. The Prestige card was unfortunately not available anymore, but that's typically what I use for my cruises. And I got a few points out of that.
Wait, is Prestige gone?
Prestige is not available anymore for new applicants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not available.
I was concerned that you lost yours.
No. It's still around, and I use it a lot, especially for all my cruise purchases. So it gets a lot. It's high in my rotation. I will say that much.
I feel like the City Prestige is your favorite card.
You know, it is, you know, between the having a high multiplier for cruises as compared to other cards and having a high multiplier for restaurants, I think it is an excellent card.
Okay, let's jump to ports. And it sounds like if I'm cheating with the show notes here, you had two or three that felt like they were very cruise ship oriented.
They were. This was kind of, I think this is qualifies as a Western Caribbean cruise, 7-day cruise. And so our ports included two in Mexico, which were Puerto Costa Maya, and the other Mexican port was Cozumel.
Was Costa Maya like a very cruise oriented port, or was that just, you know, kind of the run of the mill, similar to Cozumel?
I would say if you see Puerto Costa Maya on your itinerary, just have low expectations, because unless you're paying for a excursion, there really isn't much there. It's very much a manufactured port. You get off the pier, you go into a big kind of mall area where there's lots of duty free shops and lots of people who will offer you things, and you know, there's a little bit of cultural entertainment there. Like they have those the kind of rope dancer type people that like spin off of a big tower in a circular fashion. I forget what it's some sort of Mexican cultural thing that is pretty artificial, but anyway, much like the port. So there is a town that's accessible via taxi that you can go to and get a real beach experience. But number one, there really isn't a beach complimentary beach experience that is walkable that I'm aware of, or if it is walkable, it's probably a fairly extended walk. There's kind of a pool area, which I'm sure you can use, you know, if you, you know, buy a few drinks or, you know, you can lounge around, but it didn't seem particularly, quite honestly, probably the pool area on the icon is probably better than what's, you know, in the port. So Puerto Costa Maya right now is probably not a great destination if you see it on your itinerary. So definitely calibrate your expectations. I will say in the future, your Royal Caribbean cruises there may be quite a bit better. Because they are, I believe Puerto Costa Maya is where they're building Perfect Day Mexico, which much like the Perfect Day at Coco Cay will be another private kind of beach experience that Royal Caribbean is putting out there. Again, has not released yet. I think it's, I don't know if it's later this year or sometime next year, but they are developing a new experience which will possibly make Puerto Costa Maya, at least for the Royal Caribbean cruisers, a lot more interesting.
And was Costa Maya the first of your stops?
It was.
So you guys probably had a sea day coming out of Miami.
Yep.
Off to Costa Maya.
Yep.
Then you were probably floating off the coast to get to Cozumel.
Yeah, I mean, actually, Honduras, Roatan, Honduras was in between that. It was Puerto Costa Maya, which is kind of like probably not the most efficient routing because I think Cozumel and Puerto Costa Maya are right next to each other. So they, of course, you know, did a little detour to Honduras in between there.
And is that another kind of manufactured cruise port?
A little bit. There's definitely a cruise port area that is very artificial. That being said, there are a lot more authentic experiences you can do in Honduras and quite a few excursions as well. Again, I don't know. They mostly will involve a taxi ride or tour operator or excursion as well in Honduras. And that's what my brother and his family took. I set them up with a sloth tour. You can do kind of like a little wilderness, wildlife kind of experience where you can see the sloth. Unfortunately, they've passed some legislation. It used to be you could actually even hold a sloth and take pictures with it. But they've clamped down on that, so you can't do that anymore. But you can still see them, and they're very interesting animals to see up close. And you also typically get a chance to, you know, interact with like cockatoos and monkeys and some other kinds of parrots and things. So so that's kind of cool. And they also do usually some sort of a chocolate tasting or some of the rum tasting or some other kind of, you know, opportunity for them to make money off the tourists encounter. But that's what he did. I ended up getting off to kind of see them off on that excursion, and that was it. I walked back on the ship, so I was probably only in Honduras for about, you know, 20 minutes. But
well, I have to believe there's a ton to see on that ship too, so
yes.
You probably got, you know, just wonderful time to explore.
I did parts. And yet there are 6 water slides on the ship, and guess how many I was able to try?
One.
Zero, I'm afraid to say.
Was it because so many people stayed on the ship? Because there was the ship was the destination?
I blame myself. I just didn't budget time effectively. And, you know, I figured, you know, I'll try it again next time. That's what I figured. I probably should have tried. What I probably should have done is did what my brother and my nephew did, which was did quite a bit of water slides on embarkation day when most people's swimsuits are stuck in luggage that is not been delivered yet to their staterooms.
That's an interesting strategy.
It is.
I'm always hesitant to do that, but I see some people, they get the best pool time that they of the entire cruise.
They really do, because embarkation day, you know, in the lunchtime hour, there's nobody really utilizing the water slide or pool facilities at that. There's a significantly smaller group of people because most people's swim trunks and other things are not accessible.
There we go. The tip of the episode. If you're going to go on Icon, mm-hmm. bring your swimsuit in your carry-on and be prepared to just tear up the water slides.
Yep.
Okay. So you had Roatan, Honduras.
Yep.
We had, next we had Cozumel.
Yeah. And Cozumel is one of those ports where, you know, again, been there many times. Not necessarily my favorite port. But we actually made a very good use of it. You know, one of the things my brother had and his family had brought was they had bought some snorkels on Amazon, and they wanted to use them. And my nephew in particular was very excited. And so, you know, we started walking, you know, outside the port, and there's a bunch of different dive shops, you know, that have some places, you know, kind of situated not far from the cruise port. And we happened upon one, and we, you know, one of the people in our group was a little forward and asked him, hey, you know, we've got some guys here that want to snorkel. Can we use your pier? Because they had a little pier where, you know, some divers and other people would typically, you know, grab a boat to go out and do some deep sea diving using scuba equipment. But they were very nice, and they allowed us, you know, really for no charge. They gave us, they even provided some life preservers for free. There was a nice little area where you could just kind of, there was a nice ladder that went down to the water. There was actually a big coral area right within very close distance of where you can enter the water. Huge fan corals and a bunch of different a bunch of different fish and sea life. It was great, in fact, and really ended up costing us almost nothing. We ended up renting one snorkel, and we ended up tipping them like $20 or something, just because they were so nice, just to let us use the area. But really, it was a no cost ability to essentially have a little bit of a snorkeling encounter, very close to the pier, like a 5-10 minute walk from where the pier is.
I hope you saved that one.
Yeah, so that was nice. So we did a little bit of snorkeling, and my nephew got his first chance to do a little snorkeling, which was great, and he loves it. And he was like, he was basically negotiating, like, okay, how many hours of snorkeling can I do in Coco Cay? We also it's
did you have
enough,
the heart to tell him yeah. that it was not going to be anywhere close?
We'll talk about that in a minute, but let's get off of Cozumel first. You know, the other things we ended up doing, because it ended up going quite the day, because, you know, we actually got some people got their hair cut. So they're one of the people that was part of our group was actually somebody who sails Carnival a lot. And this was, I think, one of his first Royal Caribbean cruises in a while. And he says he usually gets his hair cut in Cozumel. And there is, in fact, you know, a little mall with a hair cuttery there. And my nephew needed a haircut. His hair was quite long. So two people got their haircut, you know, in Cozumel.
Are we talking like Turkish style haircut where they're like, you know, getting your nose hairs, your ear hairs, doing a little nice shave?
Apparently it's a place where a lot of the crew would go to get their haircut. So
interesting.
So,
is it fancy or just run on the mill?
I think it was like $8. It was not fancy. It was an $8 haircut. Okay, which for Cozumel, I'm sure, is still, you know, reasonable price, but, you know, for the U.S. is a bargain. So we got the haircuts, and then my other friend, you know, has a taco truck that she likes. So we went to this blue truck. It literally is a taco truck and built out of a blue pickup truck. So we had some delicious tacos, and, you know, it's kind of next to this wooded area where there's this other kind of endemic, like raccoon-like, species of animal that is eating all the leftover tortillas, you know, so we had a little wildlife encounter too. So that was actually interesting, and it was really, actually the tacos were excellent. They were delicious. So,
So Cozumel, where multiple people in your party have been there so frequently,
yes.
that they know the local establishments,
absolutely.
And have their favorite seat at the barber shop in the food truck.
That's exactly correct. we revisited some of the best of the island that was in walking distance, which ended up being quite nice. So Cozumel, despite being not my favorite port, but it ended up on this cruise being excellent because we just had some great things to do, and it was all just, you know, very, you know, inexpensive, cheap, and great, you know. And then we went to the OXXO, which is kind of like a 7-Eleven. We picked up some Mexican snacks on the way back. So, you know, again, just, you know, an inexpensive but fun day, you know, really experiencing Cozumel.
Really sounds like the pinnacle of the trip.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good. And then we had a sea day, and then we made it to Coco Cay. Which, you know, is, it doesn't matter if you're on Icon or Mariner or Grandeur or whatever. And, you know, I think we had, I'm trying to remember who we had next to us. I think we had like, Adventure of the Seas or something, which is a Voyager class ship. And again, you know, whenever you have, you know, a couple of these ports, you have like some of these older ships next to it, you're just like, wow, the difference is kind of night and day between the two ships when they're on a pier.
But you're also probably very happy.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, because of how small the ship is.
Yeah. You know, Coco Cay is, I think I can say pretty definitively, is one of the best private island products that are out there among all the different cruise lines. I think people keep aspiring to do things as well as Coco Cay does it. And I think they really have Coco Cay figured out in terms of, you know, the transportation, getting people off the ship, you know, the food that's available, the different facilities, you know, they've scaled it correctly too, because there's just so many different areas for people to go to, including some upcharge facilities. There's like Hideaway Beach, which has a heated pool, which on this particular day was, might have been nicer, but you know, we went to the regular pool that's not heated and we were fine. It was a little bit warmer than the cruise I mentioned earlier in this episode. So we had temperatures in the 80s, so it was quite nice.
So you've been there, I don't know, a couple dozen times.
So many
least.
Times.
So you've seen it before the Hideaway, super premium beach club edition. In your opinion, do you feel like with that addition, it appreciably changes your experience at the kind of, you know, the main pool and then that beach?
Yes.
that we typically go to? Do you
think
feel like it does?
I think it improves it quite a bit, because I think what it does, it funnels some of the guests away from the non-pay area. So I remember when Coco Cay first opened, the bar at the pool was a zoo. For instance, because it funneled all the guests. All the guests were there wanting to get their drink inside the pool. Now that you've got Royal Beach Club, you've got Hideaway Beach, you've got more than one premium area for people to go to. If they want, you know, if they want to get their drink on and party, you know, some people choose to pay a little bit extra and go to Hideaway Beach and have it, you know, kind of the adult experience, because there's no kids there. And then the people who are families or the people who don't want to pay, you know, I think some of those experiences are greatly elevated, because a number of people that are trying to utilize the space has really been spread out. And suddenly, you know, it's not hard to get a beach chair. Beach chairs are plentiful, you know, space in the pool, plentiful, you know, walking up to the bar in the pool, you're not waiting more than, you know, 5-10 minutes to get a bartender to serve you, you know, because you have more of this, you know, facility, you know, really scaled out and spread. And I feel like that seems to be kind of the magic of Royal Caribbean, at least for me, because, you know, they just do an excellent job of distributing people, both on their ships and, you know, at their private island, you know, where they realize that one of the things that makes a cruise vacation suck is having too many people around, you know, and having 7,000 people or guests on a ship. You've got to distribute those people and move them around in such a way that you're not having so many of them in one place. And they've really tried to tackle that, I think, and they've had a lot of success at it, I think. And part of it is creating other opportunities for people and having different price points for things and just distributing the demographics of people out so that there's no one place that you just have a crush of people.
You know, I love how you said that, because it really brings it almost closes the loop fully, because you had started with saying how the 4,500 people on the Star Princess, you felt that
yes.
many people, yet you're on a ship that's roughly 7,000 people on the
yes.
Icon, and you don't feel it.
No,
and Royal is exceptional with that, and I feel like that is perhaps the most important aspect of a cruise, right? Yes,
really
you want to relax, but part of relaxing is never realizing there are really 7,000 other people on that ship. Like at no point on most or on almost every Royal Caribbean ship I've been on, have I felt the full burden or the weight of everybody on, even on embarkation.
Yes.
And more importantly, on disembarkation day.
They do it better than almost everybody, because, you know, on the Princess cruise, for instance, I had 4,000 people. I was in line to get on the Princess Cruise, you know, for a good, you know, 30, 40 minutes, you know, to get through.
I don't think I've ever had a line to get on a royal ship.
I agree with you entirely. And, you know, we even had an extended embarkation process because although, you know, myself and my parents are expert and experienced cruisers in Royal Caribbean, my brother and family is not, and they did not do the online check-in. So we did have to go to the places and provide all the documentation. It was very complicated too, because, you know, these were, you know, the way that, I don't know, there's a little bit of maybe too much information, but typically when we book these cruises, especially if they're through the casino, it'll be myself and my nephew and my mom and my sister-in-law and my brother and my father. And we're all like kind of mixed up into the rooms. And so at check-in process is always a little bit confusing because you don't typically have the couple of people, the you know, the married couples together as you would normally would when you book these cruises. And so it's always a little bit more complicated. But even then, there really was not any major line. It really did just take us a few minutes to get on board. And then once you're on board, again, the places and typically you would see crowds would be places like elevators. And on Icon of the Seas and some of these newer ships, they've gone to these destination elevators. And my God, what a huge difference that makes, having destination elevators where you have a tablet and you pick the floor first before you get on. And it says, go to elevator A because you're going to this floor. And you guys go to elevator J, you know. And so you have these huge elevator lobbies, but you've distributed everybody, right? So that, you know, the people going to the buffet are all going to elevator A and the people going to floor 7 are going to elevator B and, you know, such. And as a result, you know, it was very rare that I had a full elevator. Like there would be like maybe 2 people, 3 people in an elevator. I can probably count on my hands when I had an elevator that was completely full.
Right after a show or right after a dinner or just before dining.
Maybe I'm late sure. in the port day where everybody's coming on board at the same time. Oh, those are the types of times where you'd see, or after a show. Those are the only times you had a lot of people. I will tell you one more tip. The places where you do see a lot of people, my time dining. At 6 p.m., because the people who don't make a reservation and do the early dining or the late dining, they all come at the same time, unfortunately.
And it's funny because, like, we're always early diners.
Yes.
I know that you generally are, too.
Yes.
And you walk out of the dining room, and you just see this long line.
Yes.
And they're all, like, they're all
miserable
hungry
looking.
And miserable. And you're like, well, if you could just align to a schedule, you'd be fine.
Yeah. I would say another big tip for you guys from a cruising perspective is, you know, I know that you may not love dining at 5 o'clock, or you may feel like dining at 8 o'clock is too late. I think they do have a 6 p.m. fixed dining now, by the way. The one negative being that I think the one negative is everybody wants to dine at about 6:30, and that is the only time that I see the ship really nuts. So I would really recommend that you guys pick a set dining time if you're going to go to the main dining room. I think that's a very, very strong tip. The only downside with like dining at 6 or 6:30 is it's kind of in between the show time. So you're always not quite, you're too early or too late for a lot of the shows. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah. You have to adapt your dining style based on the ship. I mean, for better or for worse, if you want to see shows, if you want to take in, if you want to take in the entertainment, you need to make compromises. That's just the nature of the beast.
Yep.
Now, did they have 2 or did they have 3 dinings?
I think they may have had 3 different dinings because I feel like Royal Caribbean has been moving this direction where they started to have an early, a late, and a mid. But once again, I think the one disadvantage with the mid is it's still pretty. That's probably going to be where you're going to have a lot more crowding, at least even getting into your areas. You're going to be walking around a lot of people. And then the timing is such that activities typically you'll either be late or early for a lot of activities if you're going to pick that dining time.
Yeah, I felt like they did that, I know they did that on the Allure, and I wondered if that was a European thing because, you know, going out of Spain, Europeans eat late, like super late.
Yes.
As you know, pretty much just along the entire Mediterranean. But it sounds to me like they might be moving to that just on the larger ships just because it makes sense.
I think they are. And, you know, and there are also significant people who don't eat in the main dining room, the people who go to the buffet for dinner, you know. So I think they're – I think in the past they just had, I guess, a higher percentage of the people doing the main dining room. And now I just think they can offer three different dining times because I think they're able to spread out people – a little bit more easily and find places for them to sit, you know, where maybe in the past it was a little more difficult to support three different dining times.
And I didn't feel like anybody was on top of us when we were doing that, when we had that three dining times.
Yep.
So final thoughts on the venerable icon of the seas.
I loved it. It was great. I will tell you this much. It was not a very relaxing vacation.
Tell us more.
I will say only because the number of activities, you know, trying to cater to my parents, my family, you know, and my friends. I had three different cohorts of people that I was kind of not so much managing, but I did have to do a little bit of, I think, some for each of those of different groups of people. You know, I was spending a lot of time with my friends. You know, we were playing board games. We were doing trivia. We were doing, you know, those type of things. My family, you know, especially my nephew. And, you know, I was trying to do some stuff to keep him entertained and make sure that they got the most out of their vacation. And then, of course, you know, I have to do little things for my elderly parents as well. So I felt I was fully subscribed from an activities perspective, and I was trying to make sure we went to all of the various entertainment options. So, of course, those were quite a few throughout the week. And then corralling people. And I messed up sometimes, you know, like when we got on Coco Cay, I did not do a good enough job coordinating all the different groups that we were going to meet here. And, you know, I had to go searching around the island for my brother and his family because he ended up being a different part of Chill Island than we were. And then even on embarkation day, I think my parents didn't know exactly what time we were going to be. So I was constantly calling their cabin and some other things. So there was a little bit of drama there. And it just comes with having a large group of people on board, including some who are not familiar with all the processes and all the things that come with cruising. And again, the ship was just so – there's so many things to do and so many activities and other things that, you know, the number of hours in the day to be able to, you know, have fun with friends and eat, dine out and see shows, go to the casino, do the things at the beach, you know, it's exhausting just talking about it a little bit, I think.
So you went from the admiral to the cruise director, effectively.
A little bit.
It sounds to me
at
like that's what
family.
You ended up. Yeah. I mean, you were the great coordinator.
And it's necessary sometimes. I was hopping. You know, we were all in the same hallway on deck 10, so I was just hopping from cabin to cabin to cabin. Dude, I was like, okay, hey, here you do this, and I need to grab that for you, and then okay, I'm going to drop that off over the other room, and there was a lot of coordination that I just took on myself just to help out the different family members and other things that were going on, but you know, my final thoughts on Icon is it was amazing. It is great. It is among the best experiences. In cruising period, like I would say it's definitely the best within Royal Caribbean, but I mean, like it's very hard, I think, for other cruise lines to replicate all the great things that are going on that ship. There's very little I can complain about, you know, on Icon, because they really are doing a lot, and the staff, they're among the best staff. There were dining room people that were amazing, that were just on top of it. The head waiter was coming by every single day with a different origami animal for my nephew. It just everything, you know, the stateroom attendants were on top of everything. I had everything I needed. There was literally, I cannot complain about any staff. They were all wonderful. And there's really very little to that went wrong or could have been improved upon, really.
That's amazing. I mean, even hearing about the head waiter, usually the head waiter's kind of useless. I'm sorry. I'm just, we speak in truth, right?
You know, the first night was a little bit of a mess because there were nine of us, right? So ideally we're in this one area and you would think they'd make one table for nine, right? But we had two tables for five, I think, essentially, or six. Or
oh,
whatever,
that's weird.
Which is not what we desired. And I think they were I'm now only remembering that now because literally it's hard to remember that because of all the other things that they did afterwards where they were just on top of it. You know, after that, they set up the table correctly for the nine of us, which is a kind of a weird number, but, you know, and we were all in this one area. And, but, you know, after that, I mean, you know, I always want a little iced tea, you know, with my meal. Iced tea
and
was there
got
every
it there
night
for you
every night. And usually
it's those small things,
drink more than one of them usually. And you know, just they were just on top of it. They knew what they were doing, and they were very good. And you can't always say that about every cruise line and every dining room, but they were on top of it.
And that's why we're always focused on that main dining room experience, right?
Yes.
It's because they remember you want the iced tea.
Yes.
They remember that you all want to sit together. They remember that, you know, your mother likes a particular type of bread. And those things make it just that much more of a wonderful experience, a wonderful, you know, sort of interlude to the final part of the day.
Yep. They recognize that your nephew really enjoys the origami animal, and then it becomes a nightly ritual, you know?
Yeah. So. The nightly rituals. I mean, that's the thing about main dining room that just makes it even more special.
Absolutely.
You, so much so that you get home and you miss it. You're like, oh, we're home. Like,
yes. Back to
what
reality.
Are we going to do now?
Yes. You do miss it. And you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, the cruising continues to get a larger portion of my wallet share, you know, from my traveling. I mean, I think, honestly, it will be the majority of traveling that I'm going to do in 2026.
And the majority of your vacation time share, too.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yes.
You know, time is always our most finite resource.
It is a very finite resource.
And cruises, that is no small commitment when you think about it.
Especially the 7-night variety.
And
that being said, you know, I really do have to, you know, though, be a proponent of the 7-night cruise.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a nice break. I mean, if you're not the cruise director.
But, you know, even if you're not, I mean, we've done the cruises that have been a little bit shorter. And, you know, it's noticeable how much less time you have to do. I mean, like I said, I was on there for a week. I could have stayed on two or three more weeks and not be bored and say, oh, I did that already. Because there's just so many variety of things. There are restaurants on the ship that I didn't have a meal at. For instance, like there's a Loco Fresh or, you know, Mexican food. I didn't try that at all. I never made it up to Swim and Tonic, which is the swim up bar and pool.
Ooh.
for on board, the Icon. I didn't make it to the Hideaway, pool at the back, which is the adults only pool, with the Infinity, on the top deck. I didn't do any of the water slides. So you saw there was a lot I left on the table, even though I was there for a week.
Well, I mean, it gives you things to plan for the next time you can get on an Icon.
That's right. And I'm sure I will be on, and, you know, they keep adding them to the fleet. So I'm sure there'll be, you know, at the end of the day, there'll be four or five of these at some point. And, you know, it'll be right now, I think there's significant premium to get on some of these ships, but I will definitely see that. I'm sure that premium will start going down as there are more of them in the fleet and more people have experienced them.
Well, and I just like the Oasis.
Yes.
I mean, the Oasis are still wonderful, wonderful ships, but you've got what, 6-7 of them right now.
Exactly. And for quite honestly, there's some things that like we just talked about 150 Central Park, which is only available on the Oasis class ships, and that Urban Garden Martini. Those are some things that I would definitely want to go back on an Oasis class ship to experience those things, and things like the dry slide and some other things that are perfectly good on an Oasis class ship. And quite honestly, the difference between Icon and Oasis is there is definitely a delta. But, you know, you definitely incorporate that into your travel planning. I mean, if you've got choices and you say, wow, this Icon sailing
little
is
expensive,
twice as expensive as maybe this sailing on Symphony of the Seas or Allure or something like that, I'm not so sure that it's worth twice as much. But at the same time, it probably is worth a little bit of a premium because there are other things that you are going to experience only on an Icon of the Seas sailing.
But I also think that's a little bit of the community mindset that we're in, right? You know, you've got the latest and greatest with the Icon coming out. That creates an opportunity to enjoy these Oasis ships.
Yep.
And some of them are being amped up, right? Like the Allure was just refit.
In dry dock.
Yeah. And so, you know, me being on it back in September, that was, it felt to me like a Utopia Plus.
Yes.
Right? And Utopia being the newest Oasis class ship. So, I mean, I think by Icon and Star and soon to be Legend being out there, yes, those are great ships. And, and I know I want to get on one. But it also feels to me like it makes an opportunity for a lot of folks to be able to get on the Oasis ships. I mean, you know, you and I are getting those casino offers. I'm seeing a lot of Oasis options.
Yes.
I mean, now some of them are not amazing, right? I mean, Utopia and Wonder are doing the 3 and the 4 day cruises. That's not an amazing experience. You know, on such a short duration. But you have the Allure, you've got the Harmony.
But definitely it's a lot more harrowing to just try to squeeze stuff in 3 or 4 days, especially on these type of ships.
Yeah, exactly. But you've got Allure, you've got the Symphony, you've got the Harmony. Those are all on 7 day. I can't think of what the other Oasis class ships are.
Galveston. Oh, yeah, those are the other ones. And the Oasis of the Seas, of course. You know,
and the Oasis. Yep. So you've got plenty of opportunities where maybe the Oasis or the Harmony or the Allure are now available because you've got the Icon and the Star out there.
It reminds me of the first time I started sailing on Royal Caribbean. And I remember the Oasis class was very expensive, right? And I thought, oh, well, what came before the Oasis class? Freedom class. And really, I fell in love with Royal Caribbean sailing on their Freedom class ships, like the Liberty and the Independence and the Freedom, which are, you know, which were all, you know, kind of, again, those were the Oasis of their time. You know, back in 20 years ago, they were the largest ships in the world. And now they've been eclipsed, you know, three times over. But that being said, they're still quality products. They still have ice skating rinks. They still have water slides. They have rock climbing walls and mini golf. And, you know, there's still lots of different amenities and Broadway musicals and other things that are on those Freedom class ships that make them a great vacation, even now. But you know, at the time they were second best, right? And so, but you know what? Second best is in some cases, especially on cruises, still pretty good, actually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tom, we've covered two great cruises, two great cruise ships, two great cruise lines. I think we should wrap it up.
I think so, too.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you've enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.